Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Here we go. Sears is greening up by selling men's suits made of what? A, organic cotton, B, recycled plastic bottles, or C, hemp?
I'm going to have to go with A.
Organic cotton?
Yeah.
No, it is incorrect. They're actually making men's suits made out of recycled plastic bottles.
Wow.
Yep. Thank you. All right, stop the green light.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Now here's the man who's greening your world one kilohertz at a time, Mike Novak.
And we're sitting here talking about the virtues of plastic as a material for a suit.
Fashion material.
Actually, we're talking about the attributes of plastic as a material, not necessarily the virtues.
The attributes. Because I think the first suit I ever bought was plastic. I mean, it was certainly...
How wide was the lapel?
Yeah. I want to know how wide the lapel was.
It was the brand Joe Namath.
All right.
Yeah. Imagine Michael walking around in a Joe Namath plastic.
Did it come with the fur coat?
Which was really not fur, but plastic also. No, it did not. It just came with a little, and it had Joe Namath signed all on the lining, up and down the inside lining, so you couldn't get away from it. It's not like a discreet little patch on the pocket. No. Joe Namath's signature was everywhere. And I think you got a free fifth of whiskey with it as well. So.
But I'll bet that was really, really cool.
Yeah, you were fly. You were super fly.
I did. I thought I was pretty cool. I had no idea. This is the world I grew up in. I had no idea that there really was a difference between polyester and real fabric. So, clothes
were... There was a lot of that going around, though, Mike.
Clothes were clothes at that time. It's just that it was a suit. It was a nice dark blue suit, and I probably had it for 15 years, you know.
Did you have the vest underneath?
Oh, yeah, the vest.
Right,
oh, yeah, there was
a vest. 3-inch wide tie.
Of course.
Excellent. Orange?
Are you kidding? Orange tie? No.
Oh.
No. Never had. No. No. But I will admit that in the 70s, okay, I'm 6'1". I wore platforms in the 70s. I was as tall as Abe Lincoln.
Did you do the hustle?
The hustle? No. I don't think I did the hustle. I think the hustle came, that was after my strutting days.
Yeah. I just love to see you gardening in platforms. Just love the hustle on the radio.
Hey, look. Hey, it's the Hustle Gardening Hour. It's the Mike Novak Show, actually, on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Those voices in the room you hear, they're actually in my head. They're not really here in the room. And now you're hearing them, too. So voices in your head as well on a Sunday morning because it's so early. And in fact, both of my friends here in the studio, we have producer Heather Fry, who's deigned to grace us with her presence once again.
Yep.
Are you going to duck out on this next week?
Nope. There's nothing planned.
Nothing?
Not for a long time.
And are we allowed to give the good news about your status here at Chicago's Progressive Talk?
Yes.
All right, wait, where's the bell? My headphones are down there, too. There they are.
Oh, okay. Good.
Heather Fry has been hired full-time here at Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Which means that I will probably never see her again.
No, yes, you will. I made it very clear that I was sticking around on Sundays. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You make sure. And when they say, oh, no, Heather, we want you in during the week, and we'll find somebody for Sunday. No, that's not going to happen, okay? If Harvey Wells is listening, no, that is not.
You get to keep me, I promise.
That is not going to happen. The other.
So you can keep whipping me like a mule. No,
I beg your pardon. This coming from the lady.
I ditch out of him last week and I call him whipping
me. She ditches out of me last week, comes in here 7:45 today and says, there's no coffee. And
see, now I am going to get whipped.
And skating on thin ice at the same time.
Oh, sorry.
And the other voice in your head in the studio is the inimitable Beth Botts, formerly of the Chicago Tribune. Now, you know, how long do we get to say that? Because it really is still kind of recent.
Well, technically, you know, I still do write a kind of somewhat weekly column in the Chicago Tribune Sunday section. So I'm even, you know, like technically still sort of tenuously connected with the Tribune.
All right,
so
I think we can just say, well, see, now I'm going to have to change the website. I put up former, but you're right. And the problem is I canceled my Tribune. So I don't, because they let you go. See, now do I have to get it back?
No. The you know, you are allowed to choose what media outlets you subscribe to, Mike. I have nothing to say about that.
That's true. I don't know. Now, you know, I can buy it on the newsstand. Of course, what I discovered, what was pretty interesting, and gives you the state of newspapers in America these days, is that for about 6 months' worth of Sundays, I was paying like $7. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're practically giving it away right now.
Yeah.
It's just scary. I mean, and the fact that Mr. Zell, and I know you still write for him nominally here, marginally, however you want to put it.
Inexpensively.
Inexpensively, right, because they don't, no more Bennies. I know how that works. I worked for them for 25 years without Bennies. And now he wants to unload the thing again. It's like, give me a break.
Is he still trying to sell the baseball team, too?
He sold the baseball team.
He sold the baseball team.
And he, you know, Zell doesn't own, he theoretically never owns the Tribune and definitely doesn't own it anymore. It's now owned by a bankruptcy committee made up of its creditors.
Yeah.
And the only question is what the creditors are going to do with Tribune Company, and nobody knows that yet.
He leveraged the whole thing. That's the way they always describe it. He leveraged it, meaning not a nickel came out of his own pocket.
Well, you know, $300 million is like, you know, lunch money to him. But basically he took enormous mortgage, and, you know, the mortgage was foreclosed. So there you are.
And speaking of Chicago things, and this is, by the way, Beth and I are here in the studio. If you got a gardening question, you're welcome to call. But I got a feeling some other people might call about something else, because I want to talk about the Olympics in just a second. 773-838-WCPT, 773-838-9278 is the phone number. For 2 hours, Beth's going to sit around here with me later in the program. Obviously, Rick DeMaio weather at 8:30. And then in the second hour, a guy who's becoming a regular on the program, Benjamin Cox, Friends of the Forest Preserves, about, well, something that even Open Lens, Open Lands, which is, it's a prestigious organization and full of people who are movers and shakers and not given, as I say on my website, they're not usually given to hyperbole, but they're calling it a land grab. And the village of Hinsdale wants to take some forest preserve property and turn it into a park. And we'll talk about why that might not be such a good idea in the second hour of the show. Did you get any bulletins? Wasn't the giant pumpkin way off yesterday at Didier Farms?
The giant pumpkin way off was at Didier Farms, and let me just see if I can find the.
Yeah, you go.
I'm going to go hunt up the results of the giant pumpkin way off.
Actually, I went yesterday, but it didn't seem like they had anything online yet. It's just it was sort of the general thing, so I'm not sure it's posted. And normally, I think last year I had George Janowick on the program to talk about that because he's grown some giant pumpkins. I know Ken Benson grows giant pumpkins out at Triton College. I don't know if he was involved in this. Maybe I should wake up Ken. Give him.
He'd love that.
He would. He'd appreciate that. Hey, Ken, how's your pumpkin? While Beth's looking for that, and I see the Heather. See, they both went away from me. They're both scanning giant pumpkins here online.
We're working really hard here, Mike.
I know it. For your pay.
Well, yeah, except that your laptop isn't working that well. But
how is it not working that well?
I'll
deal with it.
What's wrong with my laptop?
It just doesn't want to go to the Didier Farms pumpkin way off. That's all.
It doesn't. Why wouldn't it? Of course it would.
Let's talk gardening, Mike.
I want to know what's wrong with my computer.
I have a question. Yes. Okay, the pumpkins are always harvested in the autumn. Is that their season? Is that when they're normally ready and ripe?
Yes.
Now, when do you plant a pumpkin to get giant pumpkin results?
To get giant pumpkin results, you start way before the growing season.
And you coddle them, and you put them under tents, and you heat them, and
you start the seeds way, way back in the winter, and you nurture them under lights, and you fuss over them, and you supercharge them with fertilizer. You plant them outside.
You have to have the right seed, too. You have to have special giant.
Really?
Variety, and then you choose the pumpkins that you think are going to be your championship pumpkins. It's like
and you kill the others.
You kill off all the others, and you like
you really you kill the whole vine.
You do because you want the vine to put all its energy into these like two or three pumpkins that you think have the best chance, and you lift them up so that they don't rot on the ground, and you coddle them, and you just fuss, and you just make
it ain't easy.
I have grander respect for the giant pumpkin.
Yeah,
it's something, you get a serious, it's like being a Trekkie, you get this like serious obsession about pumpkins. That's what it takes.
They're totally obsessed. Oh. Yeah.
Well, I love Halloween. I love the jack-o'-lanterns are half the fun for me. I love carving them and I've seen the displays. And then the Brookfield Zoo last year had a couple of giant ones that were carved. They were huge. I put my son, my nephew, and a friend's kid on one of them. Mm-hmm. That's how big the pumpkin was.
Oh yeah, they're massive. Absolutely. All right. So we'll see if anybody was at the pumpkin way off. Call us 773-838-9278. I don't know how many people would have gone out to there, but. I should have, maybe we will call Ken Benson later and see if he knows anything about this. Or maybe George, except my cell phone died, didn't die. I lost it a couple of months ago, and I'm still, reconstructing all those numbers that you have so you can get a hold of people just like that. Yeah.
Ha.
Gone.
And that's the hard thing about having them all stored now because you don't remember the actual number anymore. You just know the name.
Well, it's like 300 numbers on there, for crying out loud. And most of them business stuff. So
The Didier Farms website has no information about the results of the pumpkin way off.
It's an information coming soon.
All right, we'll talk about it next week, I hope. We didn't get the Olympics.
Nope, we didn't get the Olympics. And you know what? Personally, Mike, I'm not all that heartbroken. I wrote a blog post about this.
Yeah.
growinginchicago.com. My feeling about the Olympics, You know, I think a lot of people in Chicago had mixed feelings about the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly about the money. I was concerned about whether we actually were going to get some good green infrastructure improvements out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were not planning any big rapid transit improvements. They were planning to leave, you know, they kept talking about a temporary stadium in Washington Park.
Right.
It was going to leave a pretty substantial scar in a Frederick Law Olmsted Park.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think I really wanted that kind of infrastructure left from an Olympics. So, I was not convinced that the Olympics were really the best thing for Chicago. And, I wasn't heartbroken.
And it's interesting because I was listening to Dick Kaye talk about it yesterday, and he was disappointed, and a lot of people were disappointed. I feel like we dodged a bullet, basically.
Yeah. That's what economists were saying in David Griesing's column in the Tribune today. He's talking about an economist who's saying, you know, it was great for us to get to be the final four as long as we didn't actually have to host the things, because we got a boost in worldwide publicity and image building without actually having to go through the ordeal and expense of actually hosting the Olympics.
And I, too, worried about some of the same things you worried about, all the focus on that. And as you said, the transit wasn't going to be improved. We're still... I'm hearing rumors about Blue Cart, and I can't say that it's not going to go forward, but I'm hearing, you know, stuff that says that maybe it's going to slow down or the rollout of Blue Cart is going to get stopped because there's a financial crisis in the city.
Yeah, they're laying people off.
And it doesn't mean that with the Olympics we would have gotten that money to go to those efforts anyway. I mean, I feel like now that we don't have the Olympics, let's look inward and work to make this city better in all the different ways it needs to be better. Crime, obviously, is a huge issue.
The Olympics weren't going to do anything for the schools. And the Olympics weren't going to do anything about, you know, they might have put more police on the streets for a couple of weeks, but not going to deal in any fundamental way with crime. And, you know, now we have the opportunity to put our civic energies and our what financial resources we can muster against some of the deeper problems. You know, and I do think that there were things we probably would have gotten out of it, such as better pedestrian access across Lakeshore Drive to the lakefront.
Yeah, you did mention this, but that's, in the scheme of things, that's so minor.
It's aesthetic.
A transportation system that really works
that isn't crumbling, and
I've talked about this on the show. We've got, yes, I love the fact that we plant trees and we got flowers and stuff, but we don't have real recycling in the city, and that's one of the benchmarks of a green city. You cannot say we're the greenest city in America or even anywhere close to it until we get that house in order. We don't recycle properly here, and recycling is the tail end of the whole process. We got to stop making more stuff, but we don't even recycle properly.
That's true.
So the last part of this equation, regardless of what you say, regardless of what I say, regardless of how the people of Chicago feel, we didn't have anything to do with it. It was about the politics of the IOC. There was a great article, I think it was yesterday, in the L.A. Times about how Chicago never really had a chance, that we don't know the machinations of the IOC and the politics of that and how they work.
And also, Rio had a really compelling story. I mean, Rio had this fact. You could look at a map and you could see that there had never been an Olympics except in Australia, south of the equator.
Sure.
And, you know, that basic storyline was just so much more powerful than anything that Chicago was able to put on the table.
And one of the things I read in that story in the LA Times was that the IOC likes to consider itself a policymaker in the world, you know, influencing policy. And when you take the Olympics to South America and give this continent a voice in, you are making policy and you are changing the world, and that's what they wanted to do. And that's,
well, and you're also, you're gathering a whole part of the world into the Olympic movement that they feel maybe hasn't fully been in the Olympic movement up to that time.
And let's face it, Americans are rich enough to go to South America, but South Americans are not necessarily going to be able to come to Chicago.
That's true.
You know, that's got to be another consideration. They're still going to get American bucks at the Olympics in Rio. People are going to go, wow, I get a chance to go to Rio. Isn't that fun? Not, wow, I get a chance to go to Chicago. You know, Americans have been to Chicago, most Americans.
It would be nice to think that the Olympics would do something, you know, for green issues in Brazil. You know, they
I sure hope so.
Bring attention to deforestation problems in Brazil. Do something. I mean, Rio is, from all I hear, I haven't been there, but from all I hear, Rio is a breathtaking, beautiful city in parts, and a ghastly expanse of slums and shanty towns in other parts. And you'd hope that if the Olympics can do all that it was supposed to do for a first world-class city like Chicago, that it would really be able to leverage some big improvements in Rio. But I guess we'll have to wait to see.
Yeah, for 7 years.
For 7 years.
And meanwhile, they'll be putting in their bid for 2020. Who knows?
Who knows?
I don't
know. It'll be here eventually. It'll get here. It'll happen eventually. My son might be 45 when it happens, but it'll happen, and he's 2.5.
That's fine. You know, that's fine with me, actually. That's okay. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Beth Botts is here in the studio with me today, and, of course, my producer, Heather Fry, and we're going to be in just a little bit. I want to follow up on something that I've been doing, talking about for the last several weeks, and that's the whole monarch harvesting that our chief monarch correspondent, senior monarch correspondent, Bob Ehrlich from Evergreen Park has been handling. And I got an email this week that I want to read to you, and Beth and I will discuss this because, well, actually, I did show it to you, and then Bob responded to it, and it raises some interesting points about harvesting plants, about harvesting insects, that sort of thing, and I want to get into that issue later on. We will do that. But meanwhile, it's fall planting time. It's Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and now you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 30% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, fall garden mums are $2.50 each when you buy four. You'll also save up to 50% off all remaining nursery stock. And Sid's entire stock of perennials is buy one, get one free. Now is the time to plant spring blooming fall bulbs. Sid's has a huge selection available, and all value packs of bulbs, including tulips, daffodils, iris, and more, are just $8.99 each. Visit SidsOnline.com to download the coupon for free plant food with your bulb purchase. If it's free plant food, probably got some superphosphate or something like that, or
could be, you know,
bone meal kind of thing.
Some bone meal.
You know what? I read something not too long, several years ago, that said bone meal was kind of overrated, especially the way it's processed.
From everything that I've heard, and I recently did an interview with Scott Kunstadt at Old House Gardens in Ann Arbor about this. You don't really need to fertilize bulbs when you plant them. The time you need to fertilize them, because the bulb when you plant it already has the next spring.
Right, it's there. It's got everything in it.
It's got the food. It's all ready to go, except for the root system, which is what it needs to grow in the fall. And the time to fertilize bulbs, if you're gonna fertilize them, is right after they bloom, because that's when they start building the flower for the following year.
Right. That's a really good. And, yeah, it's once, when you buy the bulb, they've already done it right, and it's got the whole plant is inside ready to go, ready to jump out.
The bloom is inside ready to go. Everything's inside ready to go. But the real work, the real sort of creative work of this bulb goes on in the summer after the bulb has, after the bloom has fallen, the foliage is still green. That's why you need to leave the foliage on there, is because the leaves are gathering sunlight to fuel the plant to make a new flower, a new bulb with a new flower for the following year. So if you're going to fertilize, that's the time to be doing it.
And Heather was going online here. Did you know that bone meal was often used as a human dietary calcium supplement, but research in the 1980s found that May bone meal preparations were contaminated with lead and other toxic metals, and it is no longer recommended as a calcium source.
Well, that's good. The other thing...
speaking of that's good, let me just finish the commercial for SIDS, since we're like, I just wanted to let you know also, you can get details on SIDS Fall Pond Seminar coming up in a few weeks. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to SIDS for recycling. You were saying, Beth Potts.
Well, the other thing about bone meal, bone meal is just sort of traditional. A lot of people just kind of automatically put bone meal in the planting.
Whether they need it or not.
And one of the unfortunate side effects that it can have is it can attract things like raccoons, because they smell it, and they think there might be food in there, and so they get it. Along with the disturbed earth of the planting hole, it can encourage critters to dig up your bulbs.
Yeah, and people have enough problems with that, and that's why, you know,
have
I told...
enough problems with that without
that's what, you know,
issuing an invitation with bone meal.
Which is why there are things like Bob-X, which I've advertised on this show, that you can coat your bulbs in, and they do two things. They add their own smell to the bulbs, and they mask the aroma of the bulbs so that critters are not interested. Now, I've heard, you know, one of the bulbs that's not supposed to be dug up by critters is daffodils, yet I've heard people talk about squirrels digging up their daffodils.
Well, one of the things that attracts the squirrels is just the fact that the earth has been disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
They may dig any place where there's freshly disturbed earth, just because they're curious about what was buried in there. And then they discover it's a daffodil, and they say, oh, pew, I don't want that. But they already dug it up.
Yeah, it's true. And then right. Yeah. Squirrels are dumb, aren't they?
Yeah.
They don't get
it. Well, what they are is they're endlessly curious, and they're endlessly energetic, and they have a lot of time.
A lot of time on their hands.
They have a lot of time. You're off at work, you know. You're ferrying the kids around, and the squirrels have nothing to do except explore your entire garden.
Roll around heaven all day. All right. Well, Rick DeMaio, weather coming up in exactly 30 seconds, so stick around.
Conserve energy. Save money. Think Zeta. Tip 1, turn your computer off every night and when you're on vacation to reduce energy costs. Tip 2, charging adds charges. After charging, unplug cell phones, iPods, and other battery-operated devices. You may be eligible through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for home weatherization at no cost to you. For more information, call CEDA at 1-800-571-CEDA or visit CEDAorg.net.
Well, we may not get to hear this for the city of Chicago, but We have an Olympic caliber meteorologist on board, and that is Rick DeMaio. How's that for an intro?
I like that. So does that mean I'm going to have a torch in my room to wake me up on Sunday mornings now?
We can arrange to have that done.
No, I don't think so.
How are things on the lakefront today, Rick DeMaio?
Oh, pretty good, Mike. And I understand Beth is with you as well. Good morning, Beth.
Hey there. How are you?
Good, good. I'm actually at Northwestern University this morning. I got up early, went for a little bit of a drive, and I'm walking around here on the beautiful campus overlooking Lake Michigan. You were talking about the squirrels before. I think these squirrels have more caffeine in them than I do right now. What is with squirrels and a crisp, cool autumn morning after it's rained? What is it about that, Beth and Mike?
I got a feeling it's a soft dirt, and it's an opportunity for them to dig around and find stuff and bury stuff and unbury stuff. And I mean, that's all they do. They bury stuff, and then they forget where it is, and then they try to find it and don't know where it is.
Yeah, but a lot of trees get planted that way. I mean, that behavior has a place in the ecosystem, so.
And you know, it almost sounds like me on a Saturday morning after I've had a real busy week. I forget where I buried stuff on Monday or on Tuesday. It's kind of funny how that works.
Like bodies? Is that what you're talking about?
No, like where did I put that red pen? Because I have to do some grading today because I had a really busy week, and if I don't have that right red pen, it just doesn't flow from one end of the... Well, you kind of get the idea. You know, you want to grade with a certain type of pen.
I do. I do understand.
Yeah, but I have a really great story, Mike and Beth. I was walking along Loyola Beach the other day. It was about probably, I don't know, 8:30 in the morning, and I was watching the squirrel. He picked up a nut, and it could have been a she, I don't know, being sexist here, right? Actually, you know what? Probably the men dig, and the women pick them up and put them in a nice pile so they can be found later.
Oh, right? Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
And the man's like, where did I put that? Anyway, it was kind of funny because the squirrel found the nut. You know, found a place, was digging. And what I love about squirrels is that they have this innate, this sort of sense to know exactly how to pat the dirt. You know, they take their hand and they pat, and then if it's not done, they pat. And I was about 5 feet away from the squirrel. The squirrel finished, looked at me, and had this look on his face like, you're not going to tell anybody about this, are you? And it was almost like sometimes squirrels will look at you and run, but this particular squirrel actually looked at me and said, you're not going to tell anybody about where I put this, right? And I just kind of looked and said, no, I'm not going to. And I walked away, and I just kind of thought that was, you know, it's kind of a sign of the fall season, and, you know, definitely the last couple of days with the rain and the cool weather. A little bit too early for me, if you're asking, but I don't know. It kind of makes things a little bit crisp.
And, so now you are talking to squirrels. Okay.
I mean, you never know when a squirrel could be your friend, you know? I mean, you never know. I mean,
you know, you're digging yourself in deeper and deeper with every sentence that comes out of your mouth right now.
You know, I don't want to throw cold water on this, Rick, but the likelihood is that the squirrel was looking at you because the squirrel is used to living around humans, and he was hoping that maybe you might give him a sandwich crust or something.
Oh, yeah. Was that it? Okay, all right. Yeah, I guess I was thinking that he actually knew who I was and didn't want me to tell other people, tell those girls about.
No,
about
he was looking at you as a possible source of food.
Oh, the shady character named Boris or Natasha getting near you, Rick. Just take the squirrel and go the other way.
Yeah, maybe that's what I should do. I should probably tell him instead. Mike, in fact, actually, I was at a really interesting seminar for grad school at NIU last Friday. There's a professor from Notre Dame University who was talking about managed relocation, which is obviously taking plant species and moving them elsewhere in anticipation of climate change. And the talk was actually designed about will certain animal species and bird species follow the managed relocation. And there was some ethical debate on this, whether we should be doing it, whether we should not be doing it. And in the end, after like 45 or 50 minutes, he actually didn't really have a conclusion, which was kind of weird. But at the same time, was kind of interesting because he raised, I think, as many questions as we had going in there. You know, should we be, you know, mitigating climate change? Should we be adapting to climate change? And if we do some of these, you know, large-scale prairie burnings, you know, what are we actually doing to the ecosystem, as you mentioned, Beth? So it was kind of interesting. It was one of those seminars where, and you get through 45 minutes and you go, okay, what's the point of this? So we had almost about a half hour of questions afterwards. It was almost like he needed to kind of spark some interest in other people's questions. And in the end, I think it was kind of interesting. I don't know if the both of you have come across managed relocation, but it's a kind of a growing concern, particularly in areas down to the south. He was talking about how forests are actually beginning to move further north due to some warmer weather. So
that's
kind of an interesting part.
You can find out some of that. By the way, the only thing I've ever been involved in is witness relocation, but that's another matter altogether.
Oh, my God. I don't know anything more about that.
But if you go, for instance, to the Chicago Climate Action Plan, you can read about how some of these species are moving northward. And how the climate of Illinois in the next 20, 50 years, whatever, is going to change. And the idea is that in 50 years it's possible. And again, it depends on how much we mitigate the climate and how smart we get about that. But that's already happening.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of climate change that's irreversible. And I think, Rick, that the reason your professor probably didn't come up with any firm conclusions about this is because these are open questions.
There's a lot
of debate going on in the scientific community about this. The Chicago Botanic Garden, just opened this big new science center, and a large part of the point of that is to do research on these questions and try and figure out what the right thing is to do to deal with the amount of climate change that we know is inevitable, even if we do all the right things. There's a certain amount of climate change that's just built in because of what we've already done to the climate. And
not to interrupt you, Beth, but it was interesting because I know you know more about trees than I do, but someone said it seems like every time that we've done some control burns with prairie, particularly the white oak species, and the woman said it seems like every time we've done this over the last 10 or 15 years, the white oak seems to be okay. So if that's the case, why don't we just leave it alone? And it was interesting because she was obviously, for managed relocation, but at the same time, maybe we've learned that in certain instances, things are going to change, things are inevitable, there's a natural cycle to things. I think this is one way of learning that certain species, you just have to let them be, and I think it kind of comes full circle back to the squirrel. As much as we change the environment we live in from an urban standpoint, squirrels seem to know how to get by.
Squirrels are one of those animals that adapt. A lot of the area that the squirrels are so happy in, Grant Park and so forth in Chicago, that land didn't even exist 150 years ago. It's all landfill.
Squirrels are
very opportunistic. They move into a habitat and adapt to it, and I'm not worried about squirrels.
Hey, I'm glad you brought this up because I've had this article. I was going to do it last week and ran out of time, but there's an article. This is out of London. Conservationists should pull the plug on giant pandas and let them die out, according to BBC presenter and naturalist Chris Packham. Here's a species that, of its own accord, has gone down an evolutionary cul-de-sac, he told the Radio Times magazine. Packham believes that money spent on conserving the panda could be better invested in other animals, as the species is not strong enough to survive alone. See, and a squirrel, it's like a rat. It's going to be here forever. But a giant panda is, and there's some merit to this argument, I think.
Pandas are cuddly, though.
Yes,
yeah. That's the thing.
And then the World Wildlife Foundation logo, right? So how do they do that?
They're little things like, cave fish and scorpion, rare species of insects and so forth that are not so cuddly. So
True. And you know what? That exact same question came up in the seminar where he was talking about managed relocation, not so much of plants and tree species, but also animal species, because obviously the question was, will the animals follow? And he said, we try so hard to manage, certain animal species. Maybe we should just let them alone. And someone said, well, you can't do that because we've changed this. So that became another ethical question.
Well, it is because, you know, if we're going to manage, you know, people say, leave it alone, let it take care of itself. Well, we haven't let it take care of itself. We have altered the face of this planet.
And, you know, and if you say just leave it alone, let it take care of itself, then you get a situation like with the deer.
Right. And also the wolves.
A lot of wolves in northern Wisconsin. But, you know, wolves are not a big threat. Deer are.
Yes.
We've sort of decided that we're not going to do anything about this huge proliferation of deer.
But we will kill off all the wolves.
We've created all this lovely suburban habitat for deer, and we've created these forest preserves, which are just, you know, catnip for deer.
Right.
And one of the results is that the deer have essentially destroyed vast swaths of ecosystem because they have no predators anymore.
And yet we will not tolerate a wolf or a coyote, you know, because they're carnivores.
Because they're scary. People are afraid of carnivores.
They're afraid of deer. That their little doggy is going to be taken away by a wolf or something like that.
And although the deer are vastly more destructive, we're not afraid of them, and we think they're cuddly, and we're not willing to do anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
And up here in Evanston, there's been sightings of coyotes weekly, particularly along the train tracks from around right around Central Street. Where Northwestern University plays their football games. There's a I forget the name of the golf course, but there's several coyotes that have been
Peter Jans? Peter Jans Golf Course?
Exactly, that's the one.
Yeah.
And I called up the animal control because I said, you know, I was riding my bike and I heard two coyotes, and sure enough, somebody said, oh, yeah, they're there all the time. And I called up animal control. I go, did you want to do anything? Like, no, we've gotten plenty of calls about them. And sure enough, someone else told me, oh, yeah, they run across the road at night, blah, blah, blah.
And it's
now become a thing of, like, don't worry about it. We know that they're there. There's not much we can do about it. And it's really interesting that we've kind of, you know, have kind of grown to, like, accept now coyotes running through the northern suburbs. But, you know, that part of Evanston is not too far away from the northern part of the city of Chicago when you think about it.
And when they start begging for quarters, then we'll start doing something about it.
Yeah. He didn't walk up to the side of my car and say, please, sir, may I have some more?
Hey, you know what? We managed to go like 14 minutes here without any weather at all. How about that?
Well, but that's okay. I mean, I thought that was some interesting things to talk about from a standpoint.
Oh, no. I think it's interesting, too. And I think that's a very seminar you went to.
Yeah.
It raises some very interesting questions that we're going to have to address. Yeah, are we going to do the Noah's Ark approach and try to move some of these plants into an area where they can survive, or are we just going to see if they manage to migrate themselves? Who knows how that's going to work?
One good thing about the program at Northern Illinois University, Mike, is it combines meteorology with geography, urban planning, land use, geographical information systems, and one of the reasons why I decided to go to grad school there was because it's not so much you're learning about the science, but you're learning about the managed side of things. You're learning about the politics. You're learning about the future. So if all you do is science, and the quantitative stuff, you kind of lose focus about the people and the qualitative aspect of it. And you know, when I teach, I have a class of 5 students in downtown Evanston where I teach every Friday. It's a gifted kids program. It runs from grades 5 through 8, and I throw them questions similar to what is thrown to us at these seminars because I want to hear what these really young brains are thinking about. And someone said, Mr. DeMille, how come I don't see any pigeons in downtown Evanston? But I was in Chicago. I see pigeons everywhere. Why is that? And I thought about this. I'm like, that's an interesting question, how pigeons have learned to adapt to an environment as busy as, say, Daily Plaza, but you come up here where you think there's much more food supply, and they're not here, or they're not here as much in greater numbers. And it's interesting how the pigeons, I guess, kind of like where it's, you know, it's crowded, and they have their spots where they know that they have some shelter, and they know that there's a food supply, like Garrett's popcorn or something like that. But it is a very interesting question that these kids bring up, and it makes you think twice sometimes about, yeah, maybe those pigeons weren't there a certain time ago. We've actually created an environment for them.
I could take a guess at that, Rick, which is that in Eurasia, where pigeons come from, they're actually cliff dwellers.
Oh,
they evolved
right.
to live in, you know, like rock faces.
Right.
And
right.
The skyscrapers in downtown Chicago are probably a lot more like the habitat they evolved for.
Especially
than
the buildings where you had all those different, partitions, where the newer ones.
Nooks, crannies.
Yeah, right.
Downtown Evanston, even though it has more high-rises than it used to, certainly does not exactly offer the same kind of experience for a pigeon.
You know, and I wish I would have had you in the class because I would have been able to explain that because I really didn't know the answer at that point.
Well, and the other thing is the pigeons can't afford to live in Evanston. Yeah. they just can't.
They only get crumbs.
Yeah, just too she-she for them, that's all.
Yeah, we've got to start taxing NU one of these days.
Yeah, you're not going to see any pigeons in Lake Forest, okay? It's just not going to happen. There's none up there, so. All right.
We've been going on and on about other things. I'll just tell you the weather briefly. We've got a lot of stratocumulus clouds, Mike. This air mass that's with us today is kind of a Pacific origin. You can almost kind of smell the ocean in the air. We'll eventually erode the clouds. We'll get a lot of sunshine today. Eventually get up to a high of about 62, maybe 63 degrees. Still about 8 to 9 degrees below average. Great news, though, tonight. Clear skies, bright harvest moon, or hunter's moon, any way you want to call it, should rise directly to the east of us. That's the great thing about October and November, is the moon pretty much rises at about a 90-degree angle. So just about anywhere along the lakefront, you'll see that moon rise at about 6:45. For about 7:15, it should be about maybe 5 degrees above the horizon. It'll be gorgeous. Clear tonight, sunshine tomorrow, high of about 67. Then it looks like clouds and rain move back into the area for Tuesday and Wednesday. I think Wednesday probably dries out, and then we'll probably stay cool for Thursday and Friday. So definitely we're in a autumnal pattern. The pattern has definitely changed from one that was somewhat stagnant for the entire month of September, at least the first 3 weeks, to a much more progressive pattern. And you know what? This is good because what we're getting right now is we're getting some much-needed rainfall at very, say 3 to 5 day intervals, a very short amount. This stuff is really good for getting your subsoil moisture soaked down to a depth of about 2, maybe 4 inches as we head into the winter season. Because once you freeze over that top layer, you want that subsoil moisture to remain all the way through into the wintertime. So I think the pattern that we had in the spring was good for the summer, and I think the pattern that we're having right now for the early fall is good for every bulb planting you wanted for the wintertime as well. So overall, basically below normal weather between now and the next 5 days, with rain arriving late Monday night into Tuesday. Nice today, nice tomorrow, and it looks like nice on Wednesday as well. So temperatures in the 40s right now, but up to a high of 63 later on today. That's your weather forecast.
We got two questions for you. Beth is concerned about whether there's going to be any frost tonight.
I heard a rumor on some other radio station that in the outlying suburbs there might be a threat of frost tonight.
Yeah, you know what? I think if we get a scattering of frost at, a temperature of 36 to 37 degrees, that'll be fine. But as long as it's not, it won't be a killing frost. I don't think we're going to get down to 32 or 31. We're definitely not going to get to a hard freeze. And a hard freeze, once again, is when it gets down to 28 degrees for 4 hours. But I think if anybody still has a couple of tomato plants out there, which I would think by now probably they're done anyway, you want to cover them up, that'd probably be the advisable thing to do. But I don't see this as being a particularly cold air mass. And the reason why is we still have a lot of moisture in the atmosphere. And usually when that happens, you'll probably develop a layer of fog before you develop that frost. So as long as you develop a layer of fog, things won't frost out. But if it does happen around Sycamore or maybe down LaSalle, Palou area, if it happens for an hour or two, that's going to be it. But it's not going to be a killing frost.
And the other question I have is, you say it's going to be nice tomorrow, nice Wednesday, and then it cools off. What are we going to get back into any substantially warm air masses? Is there going to be an Indian summer?
No, right now I don't think so. And obviously before you need Indian summer, you need a little bit of a frost.
Mm-hmm.
But, if anything, Mike, by this time next week, Saturday and Sunday, I think we're talking about highs only in the mid-40s. I know, if we do get into a frost pattern or a frost, a period of frost, that's probably going to be about, I would say, maybe the 12th, 13th of October. And you know what? That's kind of average for this area, the Midwest. That first couple of weeks of October is when you see an average frost around here. So, that's typical for this time of year. You know what? It's interesting. You see people walking around with kind of coats and sweaters on. They're almost somewhat acceptable, the fact that has turned cool. I mean, I don't think we like it, but, you know.
What are you going to do, you know? Can't fight City Hall, pal, you know. Especially, right. This is Chicago, too, you know. We're used to that.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't see anything in the way of any warm weather, anything in the upper 70s or low 80s coming back anytime soon. A very progressive pattern, which means probably near or below seasonal temperatures. And seasonal high right now is 69. So to answer your question, nothing really warm coming down the pike.
And, of course, progressive pattern is progressive radio. So that's why we have that.
Although, you know, Rick, I would personally, I would argue with that adjective progressive. It doesn't sound very progressive to me to be getting colder.
Well, I look at it this way. If you look at a weather map, the pattern is coming from the left. How about that?
Okay. Thank you, Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com. You can go to MikeNovak.net. That's NOWAK.net. And click onto his face or, you know, throw things at it. But you get to his website in there. Lots of good information at DeMaioWeather.com. And always a pleasure to have you on board. You can tell us about your seminar next. Oh, but, and maybe we'll talk about next week the thing I sent you last night.
The cocoa rods, yeah.
Right, how average people can help out in determining the rainfall in the Chicago area.
Matter of fact, one of the guest that we had on the show when you were gone one week, Patrick Sketch, is a Cocoa Rods Observer. So, yeah, we could talk more about that next week.
That sounds good.
Okay, see you, Mike. Bye, Beth. Bye, Heather.
Bye.
Bye.
Here's a tip from the care of trees. You might know this. Trees are a good investment. According to some studies, a single tree in the front yard adds 1% to the sale price. In one instance, a court determined the loss of a large black oak tree was worth $15,000, or 9% of the property. Let's see. So if that's 9%, we'll do the math. A few trees planted properly around the house can cut energy costs anywhere from 6.5 to 25%, according to some studies. A row of windbreak trees can reduce wind speed by 85%. That's really going to make a difference in heating costs come January. And Edith Macra, community trees advocate for the Morton Arboretum, who was here on this very show last week, says that for every dollar you spend on a large shade tree shading the west wall of your home, you get a $6.70 return. So for every dollar you spend, and yeah, that makes sense. I mean, these are all.
I'd pay more for a house with a big tree.
I would, too. If you want to preserve that investment, you should make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the care of trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Planning a new home or starting a remodeling project? Let the light flow into every room with style and grace. Marvin Design Gallery by Estates Windows Limited knows that any room's appearance is greatly affected by its windows. Today's discerning homeowner looks for three things in a window purchase: quality, style, and energy savings. At Marvin Design Gallery, you'll find the unmatched quality of all wood frames, over 11,000 standard and custom window designs, plus the energy savings of wood construction and special glass treatments. Now you can see, touch, and operate over 70 window and door displays at their state-of-the-art showroom. Marvin Design Gallery is located in Lake Bluff at 930 North Shore Drive. On the web at marvinbyestates.com or call 847-615-1003. That's 847-615-1003. Marvin Design Gallery, featuring that distinctive window that fills a room with light to make it something really special.
The September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is on newsstands all over Chicago, and there's a lot of good reading in it. I bet you'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Beth?
I would agree with that.
Because she is a senior editor. She just jumped right in there, just, you know. You just walked in the door and they said, hey, want to be a senior editor?
They said, hey, want to come to some meeting?
Yeah, I know. I try to avoid those if I possibly can. For instance, do you know what a sedge is and why you might want to have some in your garden? I think a lot of new gardeners have no idea what a sedge is. And yes.
It sounded like a hedge you sit on or something.
A sedge. I like that. A hedge you sit on. No. Wrong.
Okay. No. I assumed it was wrong.
They're great plants, and you can find out about them at Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. There's a story about the new 20,000-square-foot garden around the Shedd Aquarium planted by two of my favorite people, Roy Diblick of Northwind Perennial Farm and Shedd horticulturist Christine Nye. Do you know that they had to convince Mayor Daley to let them plant a sustainable garden? Well, you can get the... I know, it's kind of a leading thing, but if you want to find out what that means, pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Or maybe you've thought about planting winter cover crops to increase your soil's fertility but didn't know where to start. There's still time, and you can pick up the magazine and find out how. Of course, there are the regular features like what to do in the garden, your gardening questions. There are regional reports. They also have the best horticultural events calendar, bar none, in the Midwest. And now you can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine all over Chicagoland. In fact, more than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. Don't forget that I happen to do a column on the inside back page. We call it Fact-Free Horticultural Musings. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine today, or better yet, subscribe. Find it on the web at chicagolandgardening.com, or you can give them a call, 866-806-1498. Tell them that Mike sent you. Well, when we come back after CNN News at the top of the hour, I want to get, and before we talk to Benjamin Cox from Friends of Forest Preserves, I want to talk about this issue that got going, the result of a letter that I received from a listener this week, and see where that leads us. I actually did a little research on this, and I found it's harder than you think to get guidelines on what to do in the wild. I went searching for it last night and could not. I mean, you know, I talk about what to do in the wild in terms of harvesting plants, saving plants, removing plants. There are really, it's not out there. It's not readily available. I did some checking, but we'll talk about this. Because
there are some laws, however.
There are laws.
We can discuss.
Yeah. And so we will do that when we come back after CNN News. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Stick around. We'll see you in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to WCPT's Self-Help Sundays. 4 hours of home improvement help for inside and outside your home.
820 WCPT AM Willow Spring, 92.7 WCPT FM Arlington Heights, 92.5 FM WCPY DeKalb, and 99.9 FM WCPQ Park Forest.
Self-Help Sundays on WCPT AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
So your brother's bound and gagged, and they've chained him to a chair. Won't you please come to Chicago just to sing?
Hey, welcome back. It's hour two of the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Here he is, once again, Mike Novak.
But not for the Olympics. Sorry.
We had the World Cup a couple years back. That was a big affair.
See? There we go. Mm-hmm. We didn't fix the trains for that either.
No, we didn't. And, like, one thing I keep hearing people buzz about, two things in regards to the Olympics, is, one, all the jobs it would have created.
Mm-hmm.
But, sadly, those would have been temporary. I'm more, like, I wasn't as afraid of the games as I was of the economic downturn of them leaving.
Well, but you know what? It's 7 years from now.
Right.
We don't know what the economic situation is going to be like
that's
in 7 years. It's not going to be the way it is right now.
Knock wood.
I'm not saying that it's going to be different. We don't, you know, it might be better. It could be worse.
Yeah.
We don't know. But that's 7 years. And the idea is the argument, one of the arguments for the Olympics is that the minute it's announced, the economic opportunity starts in a city, that right away, you know, and maybe that's happening today in Rio. Although they're still there, just partying in the streets right now. A little salsa music.
I want to go to Carnival someday. Yeah.
We need to play some salsa music. And do you think you can track something down? I've got some, I know I got something here someplace. I don't know.
And the other thing I keep hearing is, like, they keep criticizing Obama over it. Like, he was there
if
we don't. Because if he wasn't there, it would have been his fault, him being there. Well, he didn't do enough.
It has nothing to do with Barack Obama.
Well, and then no one says anything about Oprah. She was there, and she's not catching any flack for losing the Olympics.
Personally, I'm blaming Oprah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oprah, you just let us down. You loser. You loser. How dare you?
No, it couldn't be because Oprah is a broadcaster on a somewhat larger
scale. Did you just call Oprah abroad?
Than you might?
What? A broadcaster? What did...
See?
This Oprah gets no respect.
She's a television personality. She started in AM radio. You got to give her credit where credit's due. She started in AM radio down in Georgia. But, and she is like basically...
I started in AM radio. Where am I? I'm still in AM radio. Oh, wait. We got a couple of FMs here. We got three FMs.
We podcast.
We not really. We kind of podcast. I mean, this show...
You
all right,
claim you're going to podcast, yeah. But then it never kind of happens.
No, I keep saying we're going to get the whole show up on a podcast at some time, but it's really just sort of an audio file that we keep up for a week, so if you don't catch it... In the last couple of days, I've gone to a couple of websites, organizations that I've had on the show, and they say, hey, here's the podcast from the Mike Novak Show from last May, and you go into it, well, it's last week's show, so it's not that podcast. But it does keep people up to date.
That's true.
They'll see what I was doing last week. They won't see what I was saying in May.
Right.
So that's
May
why.
May was different. Different gardening things happening in May. There are different garden things happening in October.
My goal is to put the entire show on a podcast on my website so you can carry it with you anytime you want.
I'm for that.
I'm all for that, too.
I know. It's just one more thing. One more thing I'm going to add to my list. Right after the story that I'm on deadline for Chicagoland Magazine that I really don't want to write. But that's another thing altogether.
Your editor isn't listening.
No, she's not.
So, Mike, can I say something about gardening?
Yeah. Sure. Why not? We've managed to avoid it for most of the show so far.
For most of the show. I just wanted to raise the whole issue of the weather and the coolness, the inevitable coolness that Rick was talking about. And I know that there are some people who still have houseplants outdoors.
Like me.
And I would strongly recommend bringing those houseplants indoors because most of your houseplants, even if they don't get downright frozen, they're tropical or semi-tropical plants, and they really don't want to be in 40-degree weather.
They get unhappy.
They get unhappy, and, you know, if you leave them out, you know, every day that you leave them outdoors now, you're running a greater risk that they actually will get nipped by frost.
I have lost two.
So go outdoors and wander around the patio or the deck or the backyard and make sure you've got all your houseplants indoors.
I lost two of my favorite plants in the last year. Last year, I forgot I had a pencil plant. It was like 8 feet tall. How can you forget an 8-foot tall plant? But I did. It was tucked in a corner on the back porch, behind a chair. You know, it was like the only place I could find for it. And man, I just you could just see those cells exploding when it froze. So I lost a pencil plant, and then 2 years ago. What else? I lost another really wonderful plant. I can't remember what it is right now, but every year there's one that escapes my notice and pays the ultimate price in my backyard. The other thing I will say about bringing plants in, and I don't know why it happens at this time of the year, but have you noticed that in the fall, whiteflies go nuts in the garden? That there seem to be... Maybe you don't, but I have noticed in the last few years that there's always an infestation of whiteflies out there. And hose your plants down before you bring them in.
Yeah, you can hose them down good. If you've already brought them in, you can You know, put some rags in the bottom of the bathtub and wash them off good in the bathtub. If you're really, really worried about it or you have a really bad infestation, you can spray some insecticidal soap on them. Make sure you get the underside of the leaves.
The other thing you can do if you have the room is isolate them from your prize plants until you're sure that there are no buggies crawling around on them.
Right.
So, but you're right. Time to get those babies in. Now, I mentioned earlier that, and anybody's listened to the show and been on my website. And by the way, let's make sure that people do know. I got to tell you, ever since we went to 8 a.m., a lot more folks are logging on to the website.
It's a gardener-friendly time.
It is a gardener-friendly time, even though I do other things than gardening. But www.mikenovak.net is the site, M-I-K-E-N-O-W-A-K. And I'm happy to say that a lot of folks have been seeing what I'm up to online. And I know that there are people out there who don't have time to listen to the show, but they will actually go online to see what I've done because I put lots of links up there. So you can research stuff yourself. And you can always write to me, mike@mikenovak.net. If it's during the show, like right now, you can write because I the address I have up right now is mike@wcpt820.com if you want to do that.
Or they can phone us.
And
they
can
call us right now.
773-838-9278. Did you have you come up with some sort of, we were thinking of maybe giving something away. I don't know. And you're still working on a question?
Well, you know, I have a question, but it's
that's Beth Butts, by the way.
Easy. It's probably too easy. It was going to be, what's the best time to prune?
I don't think that's too easy.
No, because I have no idea.
What's the best time to prune your shrubs?
But that might have more than one answer.
That might have more than one answer. So it's not really a very good question.
How about that? What's the best time to prune a blooming shrub?
That has more than one answer, too, because it depends on the blooming shrub.
See the expertise you get here, folks? If you have any sort of horticulture gardening question, you call now. You'd be crazy not to. 773-838-9278.
I'm trying to think of a yes-no gardening question or a gardening question on which there is no dispute, and I'm kind of feeling like
there is no such issue. There is no such issue, but we can... I'll tell you what, you go figure that out, because I want to read a letter that I got from one of my listeners this week. It's Brad. I won't mention his last name, out in Western Springs. And it's not because, you know, it's anything bad. I'm just protecting his confidentiality here. Brad writes, Mr. Novak, and you know you're in trouble when somebody starts by writing Mr. Novak. I do enjoy listening to your show and try to catch it live whenever possible. I also try to listen to your podcasts if I can't catch the broadcast. You do a great job. So far, so good. I did hear a part of the show that I thought could have been handled better on your part. It sounded like you were about ready to step in, but didn't. When you had your monarch, quote-unquote, expert on, he mentioned digging up swamp milkweed from the wild. You said something along the lines of you need to be careful about that. Then you seemed to become nonchalant when he mentioned it was along railroad tracks. I understand your need to balance moving the show along, and you did a good job by trying to present other options for getting milkweed from other sources. I assume that Mr. Ehrlich is a good person and obviously is taking steps to help raise awareness of monarchs. I don't have all the facts about what plants he took or where he took them from, but what he was doing is probably illegal. First, he doesn't own the railroad tracks or the land next to it. Two areas that are often full of native plants are along railroad tracks and old cemeteries. The native plants were there when the tracks went in. Now he is out there yanking them out. He could have collected some seed from the plants instead of uprooting them. In addition, he mentioned looking for monarch eggs and caterpillars in other areas outside his own property. I envision him wandering the south suburbs looking for monarchs to add to his collection. If he wants to build a butterfly aviary and raise monarchs through its life cycle, I have no complaints as long as he is only using ones that he attracts to his yard. My opinion is that he shouldn't be taking them from outside his property or from other areas where they are naturally laying eggs. I understand how it is more entertaining to hear about a guy who raised 700 monarchs. However, your show does reach out to a specific audience. I think the audience is interested in these types of stories and is actively looking to learn and potentially implement some things they hear. Maybe others are now thinking about raising monarchs next year and removing native plants and caterpillars from outside their own property. If folks want to attract butterflies, great. Help them learn about places to find native plants and how to care for them. I personally like the Natural Garden. They have been doing native plants for decades. And you can go, he gives me the website, thenaturalgardeninc.com. If you've never been there, I suggest making the trip. Moving on here, the Natural Garden also hosts classes on a regular basis. I attend a class on prairie plants this summer taught by Jack Shuba. Brookfield Zoo attended this class because they are thinking to bring back an area for native plants. My hope is that you can help nudge folks like Mr. Ehrlich in the right direction. He is doing something wrong, even though he may have great intentions. Keep up the good work. And he signs it with, for a real grassroots movement, Plant Prairie. And that's Brad in Western Springs. Now, I sent that to you so you could take a look at it, Beth Potts. And, you know, he's got some points. And I have said it on the show before, I did sort of get through it quickly last week, that you shouldn't, if you don't know what you're doing, and if you don't have the rights, obviously, there's private property, you need to get permission to dig up stuff, even if, you know, somebody's tearing down a building or something, or plowing up a yard. I've known people who have saved Trillium from the plow, and you know, and sometimes you want to save those plants if you can, but you have to be careful about what you're doing, and it probably is better to harvest seed than dig up a plant.
Well, it's not even necessarily better to harvest seed, because if there's a colony of Trillium or some other native plant out in a natural area, it's part of an ecosystem.
Sure.
And if the seed is not falling into that area, then maybe that population will decline.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of concern about people harvesting wildflowers or wild plants from wild areas. It's illegal to harvest them from the forest preserves. Harvest plants or seed from the forest preserves. From, you know, any state park, any national park, for exactly that reason, because people get so enamored of these plants and they want them in their gardens, and they destroy the native wild populations in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that, you know, your correspondent has some legitimate points here. There are places where you can buy native plants. We talk so much about native plants. We want to encourage people to plant native plants. But, you know, there are places, plenty of places now, where you can get native plants that were raised, you know, in the field, in fields, were raised commercially rather than collected from the wild. There are plenty of mail order sources. There are plant, in the early spring, there are plant sales. You know, the Wild Ones has plant sales. The Friends of the Indiana Dunes has a plant sale. There are lots of plant sales where you can buy native plants that were raised in conditions that, you know, don't threaten the native populations.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you should be going out digging up either plants or collecting seeds from wild areas. Now, as I admitted to Mike the other night when he first showed me this email, I have been known to, you know, to do the plant rescue thing from construction sites where I know plants are doomed, where, you know, there's a bulldozer sitting right there. I have been known to go into those places and collect plants. And I've rationalized that to myself because these plants are obviously not going to survive in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that you know, even when I think about it, I realize that's a slippery slope. If there's not a bulldozer right there, how do I know that this population is doomed? So it's really better to...
Well, if somebody tells you that, I've known people who have been told by people who own property, look, we're going to bulldoze this over,
right.
Would you come in and get some of these plants out? But
that's
a very specific,
If you have permission and you know that that's what the situation is, that's one thing.
Because Bob had mentioned, and I'm going to read his response in just a second, so I don't want to leave him hanging here.
No.
But a railroad right-of-way is owned by...
A railroad.
A railroad.
Yeah.
And certainly, as you said, parks are off-limits, whether state or national, forest preserves, that sort of thing. So it really is... Well, let me read Bob's letter, and we'll bring up the other point. So Bob Ehrlich, I sent that letter from Brad to Bob, and he responded in this way. Mike, I guess I'm flabbergasted to say the least. I certainly don't think it's wrong to collect the eggs and caterpillars the way I'm doing it. Does this gentleman understand that 95% of the eggs left in the wild are eaten by predators? I guess that's okay by him. Only once was I questioned by the railroad police as to what I was doing, and when I told him what I was doing, he didn't say anything other than to warn me about trains, and he took my name and said if I was ever hit by one, too bad for me. I've dug up the milkweed along the railroad tracks and a few other plants that were interesting before the mowers come along and chop them off at the base. I've rescued several eggs and caterpillars from plants that were chopped down. I felt better about that than anything else I've done. I'm not going into the forest preserves. I'm going into the alleys and along the side of roads and vacant lots by abandoned businesses. I really can't see what's wrong with that. If I showed you some of the areas where I've dug up, it's usually where every plant is crowded, tallest. It's crowded in an area 10 feet wide and blocks long, and they are all fighting for space, and the strongest and tallest survive. Rescuing a plant is closer to what I'm doing than stealing it. I've read that 6,000 acres of land a day are being lost to builders day in and day out. We have no say in that. The monarchs and other species are threatened because of it. There are literally millions of milkweed plants in this area, and even though I dug up some, they will multiply as they always do. That's also why we got on the subject of garden centers carrying milkweed, so people don't have to do what I did. I realize there are a few places where milkweed can be purchased, but if I'm a customer of SIDS or Faisal's, for years, that's where I'm going to go. You would really have to be motivated to go elsewhere. I'm hoping to motivate people to buy milkweed and call their garden centers to get it if they don't carry it already. I will also be going to a few garden centers to get their opinions. I guess there are always people like this other fellow looking to pick apart what someone else does. There's nothing I could say to this guy to have him see the other side of the coin. He'll be listening this week. Have a great week. P.S. I never called myself a monarch expert, and I don't believe you ever said that about me either. No, I mean, what I've said is, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, he's the senior monarch correspondent. No, I never said he was a monarch expert. He says, I will never be anything more than an advocate for monarchs who found an interesting hobby that I would like to share with other people. Now, if you talk tomatoes... There, I'm an expert. I've never had a bad year, and this year's crop was wonderful. I grow 24 plants every year from seed grown in my basement, and I grow them in the... Now, this is interesting. He says he grows them in the same spot year after year, right behind his garage in the easement. About 75% of the gardening is done in the easement. I took over the areas behind three people's home with their permission. You know, you just never have enough space to garden and keep up the good work. So, you know, it's tricky. And if he's in an alley collecting this, I'm probably going to say, well, I'm not going to complain about that because those plants are surviving. But that's not a place where they're surviving, but they're not thriving in an alley, I would think.
Well, let me tell you this from bitter experience.
Okay.
If you find a plant that is thriving in an alley and you transplant it into your garden, it's probably a plant that will thrive all over your garden.
And your neighbor's garden.
And your neighbor's garden. And you will probably be fighting that plant for the rest of your life.
Milkweed is kind of like that. Common milkweed.
Common milkweed is
one. I'll tell you another one that I learned the hard way.
Yeah.
cup plant.
Yeah. Cup plant is this great prairie plant, but boy, if it likes where it is, it will just romp.
Well, I planted it a few years ago, not knowing about it, and it every year it sends up hundreds of babies in the yard, they're not hard to pull out. You just have to be diligent. But it's also growing now in my neighbor's yard, in the alley. I mean, it grows in cracks in the alley. It grows wherever it wants to. But getting back to the point is, and I don't think that Brad is one of those naysayers. I will take up Brad's part on that, Bob, and say, you know, I don't think he would complain about anything. I think he's really seriously concerned about this, as Beth and I are, and I just want to make sure that, let me just state, don't go out and dig up plants, all right? That is basically the rule of thumb, because you probably don't know whether you're helping or hurting an ecosystem. It's like when people say, should I spray chemicals? I say no. You know, and that is a very broad way to approach it, but I look at it from the point of view that most people don't read and follow label directions. I can't trust you to be one of those people who actually do. So if I can't trust you, then I'm going to say no, don't, because you're probably not going to use it right. And that makes chemical people crazy, and it makes extension people crazy because they say, no, there's times when we can use them. I look at it from a different point of view. I say, I'm looking at the people that I have, that I talk to, and I know how they respond, and most of them don't read and follow label directions. So, okay, if that's the case, I'm going to say, no, don't use it. So, that's me.
Well, I think that's probably solid advice. I would say that there are certain very limited situations in which it might be advisable to spot treat a very bad problem.
Sure.
With certain things, but only
I know what you're talking about. You're talking about like using glyphosate, Roundup, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. Let's say you got poison ivy.
Yeah, poison ivy. But you actually have to be willing to figure out what your problem is, know what that plant is, know what else you could have done about it and eliminated all those other possibilities. Make sure you're using exactly the right substance. Make sure you know what the properties of that substance are. Read and follow the label directions. If you're not willing to do all of those things, then just don't do it.
Right. And that's my point, is that we, and this is something I say in my garden, and Patricia, hang on the line. I'm going to be with you in just a second. We lost the other guy.
Yeah, we lost Marguerite and Samuel.
Okay. Call back Marguerite and Samuel. I know I kind of went on a tear here, but I wanted to get this conversation out, but I want to take your questions, and Patricia, we'll get to you in just a second. And now I lost my train of thought totally.
Okay, so here's my garden question, and this is the quiz question.
Oh.
How high should you mow your lawn?
Okay. All right.
There's a pretty categorical answer.
Yeah,
to that
but
question.
You know what? That is also subject to different answers. But we'll talk about that. Okay, let's put it this way. What is the generally recognized length to cut your lawn for organic lawn care? How's that?
Well, you know, I've been down at the Scotts Company in Marysville, Ohio recently, and, you know, this is the mothership of non-organic lawn care down there, and they agree on this. I think
with the organic people?
They agree on the height that you should mow your lawn.
With whom?
With the organic people.
Oh, okay. That's what I wanted to make sure. Okay. Let us take this quick break. Patricia, you're next. She's in Barrington. She's got tomatoes, some odd growths on there.
She's worried that they have a virus, and I guess they're showing.
Yeah, we'll,
yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, it does sound like an interesting question, so I want to get to that next, and we will do that in just a second now. Let's see where we were here. Oh, yeah, here's a disturbing fact, courtesy of Rick Moskowitz at A-Plus Pest Control. Some of you might know this. A mouse needs only a quarter of an inch space to get into your house or through a wall. A rat doesn't need much more. A half inch will do. That's about the size of a quarter. As we head into the cold weather and these pests look for a way into your lives, search your building for space under doors and check lines that come into your walls, like air conditioning tubes. Also look for broken screens and windows, which can be a passkey for rodents. If you're not sure whether you can make the right call, get on the phone and call A-Plus Pest Control. They'll give you free advice and estimates. This is the same company that developed the Plus Natural Enzymes line of insect repellents, which is the product used at Charter One Pavilion on Northerly Isle for the past two seasons. They're green, and they want to prove it to you. Give Rick Moskowitz a call and find out for yourself. Go to apluspest.com or call toll-free 888-A-PLUS-99. That's 888-A-P-L-U-S-99. Remember, when it comes to pest control, they do it like they live there. You're listening to the... Well, you know, should we... This went to sleep. Was this... I was going to play... Oh, I know. Hold on. Let's play some music, because I haven't done a musical bump in a little bit here. So let's do this first. Do-do-do-da-da-da is all we say on this radio show. Let us go to Patricia. She's on line two, right, Heather?
Yes.
Okay, Patricia, you're on the Mike Novak Show. How are you doing this morning?
I'm fine, and you?
Dandy. I'm just dandy. Okay. You, as we mentioned, you've got odd growths on your tomatoes. How odd are these growths on your tomatoes?
Well, there's a little discoloration on the top, along with a little dimpling. And I heard that there's a virus going around with all the tomatoes, which I'm not so sure.
I think you're talking about the tomato blight, which has been a big problem up in the Northeast.
Okay.
And not only the Northeast, but it came into Wisconsin. Ken Benson says the trip came out and took photos of his tomatoes. He had these beautiful tomato plants, and a week later they got the blight, the late blight, and it wiped them out. And... Now, late blight, as far as I know, it has these little lesions that start, they're kind of greasy and brownish. Is that right? Am I right with that?
Yeah. But, you know, Patricia, it's October 4th now.
Okay.
And
what are you trying to tell her?
it might be time to just kind of give up on the tomatoes.
Right.
Where do you live, Patricia?
In Barrington.
Barrington. All right. Yeah. Because, you can extend the season a little bit, by covering tomatoes and put them in under plastic or whatever. But as Rick DeMille said earlier on the show, we are getting to the point where the temperature is going to start to dip, and it doesn't look like it's going to come back.
Right.
So.
Well, the tomatoes that I do have... because I pretty much harvested some very healthy tomatoes most of the year until, like, the last 2 weeks, I would say, where they started to get this dimpling and this brownish-green color on top. Can you eat the tomato, or do you have to cut off the discoloration, or should you just leave the tomato and not eat it? Is it safe to eat?
I think it's safe to eat the unaffected part. You should cut off the bad part. Chop it up, put it in sauce or something. I have never heard that late blight poses any
danger.
I wouldn't eat it, but...
But it sounds almost like you might have that, because you say dimpling.
Yeah.
It's a lesion is usually an area, a sunken area on the leaf or on the fruit.
And all the leaves withered.
Okay.
I don't have that. Is that a sign of it, too?
They're sort of grayish fuzzy. Yeah.
Here's what I would do if I were you. I would throw those plants away. Don't put them in a compost pile.
Okay.
Get them away from your garden. Clean up any leaves that might have fallen around that area. Just get it out of there because it sounds like you might have late blight. Maybe you don't, but you might have something else, and it just for safety, you might as well get the potential away from your garden to spread
year.
For next year.
And you know, as is generally good practice, don't plant tomato plants in the same place next year because you want to avoid. You don't want to break up the life cycle of soil-borne diseases. And if you take that top growth, all that foliage, all those leaves of your tomato plants and any other plant in your garden that seems to have had any kind of disease this year, put it in the landscape waste in those brown paper bags. They'll take it away. They'll compost it in these big industrial compost piles that get to such a high temperature that they can, really, really kill these diseases. And you wouldn't be able to reach that kind of high temperature in your home compost pile, so you wouldn't be able to be sure that you're not spreading that disease to the rest of your garden.
Okay, thank you. Great tips.
Well, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
And it's a pleasure. Thank you, and I enjoy the show.
Oh, I'm glad you do. I appreciate that. And good luck gardening next year. I hope everything goes disease-free for you.
I hope so, too.
All right.
Otherwise, I'll be calling back.
Yes, you will. Thanks, Patricia. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We have an answer to our question. Let us go to line one, and Donald in North Chicago. Hello, Donald. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
I am fine.
Good. And what is your answer to the question? What was your question, Beth, again?
The question is, what's the best height to mow your lawn?
Well, you know, we've got bluegrass, we've got fescues, but I'm going to take a step for a number of saying ideally 3 inches tall.
Excellent. 3 to 4 inches.
Yay. Some people, you know, 3 inch is the minimum. Really, that now when I told Beth that there are circumstances under which you would do it differently, twice a year, in the spring and in the fall, the very first mow of the season you can do lower, and the very last mow of the season you can do lower because you want to keep the area clean. You don't want the grass flopping over and harboring diseases, so it's better to air it out a little bit.
Yeah, but if you really think you're not going to fuss with your lawnmower blade, the safest thing to do is just set your lawnmower blade as high as it will go and leave it there.
So, Donald, we gotta send you something. Are you a gardener, Donald?
Definitely.
Oh, great. All right. Let's see here. Do you have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine?
No, I don't.
You do now.
Okay.
And let's also send him, because I'm feeling generous, a copy of Roy Diblick's book, The No Maintenance Approach, which was it called?
I think it's just called No Maintenance Gardening.
No. It's not.
It's K-N-O.
No maintenance gardening. And I've got it written down. Here it is. It is Roy Diblick's Small Perennial Gardens, the K-N-O Maintenance Approach. So you're going to get both of those things done. Are you a regular listener?
Very much so.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You'll need to give your information.
Yeah, don't hang up on us, Don. I'll be with you in one sec.
Sure.
All right. And look at that. I put him on hold, and I didn't even hang up on him. All right. In 60 seconds, we will go to Benjamin Cox, Friends of the Forest Preserves. It's fall planting time at Sid's Greenhouses and Garden Center, and now you'll find savings on everything you need to get your home and garden ready for the season. In addition to savings of 30% off their entire stock of fall and Halloween decor, fall garden mums are just $2.50 each when you buy four. You'll also save save up to 50% off all remaining nursery stock, and Sid's entire stock of perennials is buy one, get one free. Now is the time to plant spring-blooming fall bulbs. Sid's has a huge selection available, and all value packs of bulbs, including tulips, daffodils, iris, and more, are just $8.99 each. Visit SidsOnline.com to download the coupon for free plant food with your bulb purchase, and also for details on Sid's Fall Pond Seminar coming up in a few weeks. Sid, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. Remember, when you're done planting, bring your plastic pots and cell packs to Sid's for recycling. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Beth Botts is sitting in with me. You should know that she's got a terrific blog site, which I've got up on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. Her blog is called Growing in Chicago, and it's real easy to find. It's just growinginchicago.com. Oh, you got a toad lily up there.
Yeah,
you just... you just put that up. I didn't see. That's the latest entry. I've got them blooming in the side. You know, I rescued them and just threw them along the side of the house in the deep shade, and they're blooming like
crazy.
They
do great in the deep shade. They're this wonderful sort of little gift that you get in October when everything else is kind of folding up.
Mm-hmm.
You get these wonderful little orchid-like purple blooms. They're just lovely things.
It's cool. Let us go to line three and bring in Benjamin Cox. How you doing, Benjamin?
Great. How are you?
All right. And you're out of town. You're at a wedding, huh?
Yes, I'm in Carbondale.
Carbondale!
We're getting ready to head over to the Shawnee National Forest and try and find some copperheads.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, so we could get into this whole discussion of why you would actually want to be hunting up poisonous snakes.
Well, but... I mean, you can walk down a road, and they're sort of migrating at this time of year, so hopefully we'll just see some. You know, crossing the road. We're not going to go, you know, looking around in the brush for him or anything.
Yeah, don't do that. All right. I like you, Benjamin. I would like to have you back on the show at some point. You know,
you're the only one I'll work on Sunday for the record.
Thank you. I take that as a compliment.
It is.
Yeah, because I called him yesterday and I said, Benjamin, yeah, you want to be on the show today? He said, well, I'm at a wedding in Carbondale, but okay.
No problem.
Benjamin is the executive director of Friends of the Forest Preserves. And, you know, actually, I was trying to get the Open Lands people on the show, but Stacy was not available. She is... she's pregnant.
Well, I mean, she's maybe gonna have a baby any minute.
So right, any second. So you were the one who ended up instead. And I mention Open Lands because they are involved in this issue, as are you. The link to their website is there. And I was talking about Stacy Myers Glenn, by the way, who works at Open Lands. But you can go to my website, this week's show, and link to the Open Lands site, and they say, Action Alert, Stop Hinsdale's Land Grab. You sent me a very similar email as well. And I found it interesting that Open Lands is involved in this issue with you, because this sounds really like a Friends of the Park issue. The idea here being that the Bemis Woods South might be transformed into something less woodsy by the village of Hinsdale. And I could see where you would step up and protest this as Friends of the Forest Preserves. But why is Open Lands involved in this as well, Benjamin?
Actually, we quite often will form a coalition. So it's actually Open Lands, the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, and Friends of the Forest Preserves, and we've also managed to bring in Friends of the Parks just recently on it.
Yeah, I was really surprised at that, too.
A lot of times, you know, it's all about the mission for us. It's not, you know, like for-profit competition. So, you know, it just means that many more numbers at work on an important thing. Like, you know, basically some of the commissioners want to take 30 acres of land and give it to Hinsdale for a park, which is, you know, exactly what forest preserves are not for. And the problem is as soon as you do it for his deal, there's going to be, you know, every other community in Cook County is going to want their little piece.
Yeah, that is part of the problem. It's a really, really bad precedent to be setting. Now, just to clarify things, you say the commissioners, we're talking about the Cook County Board of Commissioners, and they've already been negotiating with the village of Hinsdale, haven't they?
They have, and what happens is there's actually a land policy that the one of the first things that I worked on about 5.5 years ago in my job with Commissioner Mike Quigley and Commissioner Larry Sufferton, we managed to strengthen the existing land policy, which hadn't been updated since the early 60s, that basically says, you know, if it doesn't fit with our mission, you can't do it. So Forest Preserve staff were approached by Hinsdale, and they said, no, this doesn't fit with the mission. And so then the Hinsdale folks ran off to Commissioner Gorman down from the Palos area and said, hey, they won't let us do this, will you? And she said, well, I'll bring it up for you, because that's the only other way to get an issue like this on the table is to get a commissioner to do it. And, you know, they say things like, oh, it's a disconnected parcel, it's underutilized, it's this, that, and the other. None of that has anything to do with whether it's a good forest preserve or not. Forest preserve is for habitat, for plants and animals. It's not about use. And it is actually connected. This little parcel got separated when they put in the tri-state. And so it is, you know, it's a 30-acre parcel that's separated. Still a significant piece of property. It's
separated, separated from what is it right now?
From the larger body of Bemis Woods. So right there, right along the west side, the tri-state cut through Bemis Woods and lopped off this 30 acres off to one side.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tunnel that connects underneath, though, along the along Salt Creek. So there's still a connection for plants and animals. Let alone 30 acres is sufficient enough, you know, to be its own little forest preserve too.
You know what? I'm looking online here. If you go to my website and then click on to the website, the action alert from Openlands. They have a map, or actually a picture, an overhead picture, and you can see that Bemis Woods South is indeed cut off from the rest of the woods, not just by the freeway, but by an interchange as well. I mean, it's so you can see that on the map or on the photo. It is kind of interesting, but you're right. It's still a large parcel of land, and I guess what it's interesting, you mentioned the Friends of the Parks are involved in this as well, and I would think that the Friends of the Parks would say, well, if they're going to make a park out of it, that's okay. So why are the Friends of the Parks an ally in this too?
Friends of the Parks does have a Forest Preserve Initiative, so... Again, they understand the mission of the Forest Preserve, and it's just not the same as parks. You know, if you need soccer fields, you go to your park district, not your Forest Preserve district.
Yeah.
And there are existing ball fields in the Forest Preserve district, but there's sort of an understanding that they're not going to add any more.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, as people don't use them anymore, maybe they'll even stop, you know, permitting them out. But, you know, if they're there, they're there. There's no, you know, no good can come from chasing kids off of ball fields. That's just not even smart. You know, if the land's already been converted, then leave it alone. But if it's land that's, you know, habitat, then this habitat, you know, it's overrun with buckthorn, like a lot of the district. It needs restoration. It needs, you know, some care, but so does a lot of the Forest Preserve District. It still has restoration potential. As soon as you mass grade it and, you know, cut down all the trees and all, you know, change it into ball fields, it's not restorable after that.
I guess my basic question in all of this, to the Cook County Forest Preserve Commissioners would be, you know, what part of preserve do you not understand?
All of it. For a lot of them, they just, you know, they run the 19th largest government in the country, and one of it's bigger than a whole lot of countries in the world, actually, the $3.3 billion government. And they also are supposed to switch hats once in a while and run the Forest Preserve, which is a little $50 million government. And so Friends of the Forest Preserves and the Civic Federation, and now the other groups that we've mentioned have come on board, too, to support separating the two boards, the way it has been done in DuPage County, where, for whatever reason, you know, they say it was set up at the same board of the county commercials around the Forest Preserve. DuPage separated that a number of years ago. There's the requests for land have gone down dramatically. And actually, this year, Winnebago County, which is Rockford, just did the same thing. So it's a trend now to say, wait a minute, this land is too precious. We can't have these conflicts of interest where you got a commissioner who's thinking about development, they're thinking about communities, they're thinking about all kinds of things that aren't just solely focused on forest preserves. So we're trying to separate that. So that's
How is that coming along?
Well, you know, the session's coming up in, you know, it doesn't start until January. So we're building, in a big way, we're building our list of supporters, and we're really targeting specific state representatives. You're going to see a lot more from us on this in the coming months so that we can really gear up and get it done this year.
And this is exactly why, it seems to me, this kind of thing illustrates why we need to separate the Cook County commissioners from the Forest Preserve commissioners, because it's almost like they're not paying attention, you know? They can't...
Well, and it's almost like it's not fair to ask them to pay attention. I mean, they've got so much to do. One of the largest integrated healthcare system in the country, is huge court system, huge jail system. And you can go on and on. It's just, you know, and then, oh, yeah, we're supposed to run the largest forest preserve also. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
And what is going on this week is that there is a board meeting on October 7th, which is this Wednesday, and we are asking, Open Lands is asking, the Friends of the Forest Preserves, Friends of the Parks, and Sierra Club, that you write or call your commissioner and ask them not to turn this into a park, to preserve this as a forest preserve. And I love, you said it exactly right, Beth. What part of the word preserve don't they understand?
Exactly.
And the problem is people don't even get to speak at these meetings. It's just going to be the commissioners. Because they've already been working on this, how much of a done deal is this, Benjamin?
I talked to a couple commissioners, friendly commissioners last week, and they reported getting over 600 emails. They're lucky if they get warm on an issue. You know, it just doesn't happen. So I don't think this is going to happen, actually. But if we don't show up on Wednesday, we've got a rally at 9 o'clock right outside of Todd Stroger's office. And by the way, he's reporting that he's on our side on this, which will really help us a lot. But we're going to have a rally at 9. It's an hour before the meeting, and the commissioners will all have to walk by us to go to the meeting. So, you know, we're going to make sure that they know loud and clear where we stand on this issue. Coming up into an election cycle, I don't think they want this kind of negative attention.
Is that at the Cook County building?
The city hall, everybody calls it city hall, but really the east half is the county hall, I guess you would call it. So if you come in off of 118 North Clark, it's on the east side of the building, right across from Bailey Plaza, and go up to the fifth floor. Take the east bank of the elevators on the fifth floor. We'll be right there outside of Todd's office.
And if you want to know who your commissioner is, there's, again, you go to the link and Open Lands will take you to the Cook County Board of Commissioners. To tell you the truth, it's hard to find an accurate map. I finally tracked one down, and you might not realize that the commissioners have distinct districts. But they do, and you can find out where you belong so you can approach your particular commissioner if you want by going to that website. And some of the sites still have Maldonado listed in the 8th district.
Yeah.
But he's not, and that's my district. And you know,
you now have a Commissioner Reyes, Edward Reyes.
Right, Edward Reyes is now the 8th district, and Maldonado is now my alderman,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. So I haven't lost him at all. He's just moved to a different position in my territory. But you can if you track it down. And what I would advise people to do is let's inundate their offices with emails and letters and phone calls and say, don't give away our forest preserves.
And come on down for the rally, too.
Yeah,
more the merrier.
Come down to the rally at City Hall. Room 567 is where the hearing is going to be. Is that where the rally is, too? Yeah.
Yeah, right outside of that. So, yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, room 567, that's 121 North LaSalle Street, downtown. Well, Benjamin Cox, always a pleasure to have you on board. I appreciate you taking some time, and I'm glad I'm the only person you'll work for on a Sunday.
Hey, and I wanted to update you. The last time I was on, we talked about the potential burn ban that was going on with the aldermen in the city where they didn't want us to do controlled burning or brush pile burns.
Yeah.
And it looks like we're going to beat that one also. So, you know, the voice of the people works is the lesson here. People call, people write, and your elected officials, if they get enough of these phone calls and letters, they'll have to change their minds.
Well,
they'll have to pay for it at the next election, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what you said last time you were here. These commissioners rarely hear from their constituents, and then when they suddenly are getting all this email, they take notice. And so, good. I'm glad to hear that as well. And also, real quickly, I noticed that you also have an event this coming Saturday. October 10th at the Spring Creek Forest Preserve in Barrington. It's called Ignite the Night. It's got cookout, beer and wine, bonfire, narrated horse-drawn wagon rides, flashlight tours, stargazing, native live animals. Bring the kids, bring the family. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
And a live band, and it's a really cheap ticket. Come on out and have a great time.
Okay. I got to run, but thanks again. We'll talk soon. We'll see how this all plays out.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Since 1997, WRD Environmental has been creating healthy, sustainable landscapes that are both beautiful and responsible to future generations. You could say WRD is in the business of transformation. Sometimes it's through projects like the Lincoln Park South Pond, for which WRD is part of a team that is turning the zoo's popular pond into a model for sustainable landscape solutions, habitat restoration, and environmental learning. Other times it's through leadership in organizations like the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, which is an organization that I helped found about 7 years ago, which is working to green up the landscape industry so that sustainable design materials and methods are the professional standards. Sometimes transformations are of people themselves. WRD is a partner with the Chicago Department of Environment in managing Green Core Chicago, which provides job training in the green industry, electronics recycling, and home weatherization. For innovative, sustainable transformations, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. And quickly, a tip from the care of trees. Just because the weather is getting cooler, don't assume that your tree has enough water to get through the winter. At this time of year, annuals give up and perennials begin to go dormant, but the root systems of trees are still active, storing water for the long winter, which means that you need to pay attention to ground moisture, especially if you have a tree that was planted in the past 3 years. Evergreens are particularly vulnerable to desiccating winter winds. You should water all newly planted trees until the ground freezes. By the way, the best way to water a tree? Let the hose trickle at the base of the tree, probably at least a half an hour or more. And to keep that water in the soil, make sure your trees are well mulched. The care of trees shares your enthusiasm for many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. And the care of trees combines that joy with a dedication to the utmost in client care, putting you and your trees first. Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Invite the certified arborist at the care of trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The care of trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Beth Botts is here. I want to thank you for being. You've got some events coming up, don't you?
Yeah, I'll be speaking on Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. I'll be talking on pruning to the Garden Club of Oak Park and River Forest at the 19th Century Club in Oak Park.
It's so much fun to speak there. It's a great place.
And then on October 19th, I will be speaking at the Chicago Botanic Garden about the whole issue of the amount of plastic we use in gardening and what's being done to reduce that waste problem.
That's cool. By the way, Heather's been tracking down the winning pumpkin this year. It was, what, can we go real quick? We got like a minute.
His name's Jared. He's online one.
Okay, Jared, we got like 30 seconds here. Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
And were you at the weigh-off yesterday?
Yes, sir, I was.
What was the winning pumpkin?
Winning pumpkin was 1,225 pounds.
by a gentleman named Gene McMullen from Streeter, Illinois.
Oh, he always wins.
Yes, he does.
but he must be good at it. Well, I'll tell you what. Here's what I want to do, Jared. Next week, let's talk about this. Heather's got your number. We'll talk about the competition and talk about some of the other entries and growing giant pumpkins. Maybe I'll even get George Janowick on the show again, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, great. Thank you so much. I'm going to put you on hold. You talk to Heather.
Not a problem. Thank you.
All righty. There's the winning pumpkin, 1225. Well, Mighty House is next. The boys are here in the building. They're right here broadcasting live from Chicago's Progressive Talk. And I guess then I'll just see you next week. So long.